and I believe over 1,600 contacts. It's an exciting story, and you won't want to miss that. I'm certainly eager to hear it. That's next week, so tune in. On July 7th, we'll talk about the computer and ham radio connection. And on July 14th, our guest will be John Moore, NJ7E, and we'll discuss the Hurricane Emergency Net, T-Hunts, and the Official Observer Program. Should also be quite interesting. Now, I know a lot of you are on your way down from Field Day, which, of course, was this weekend, and just ended, well, about 3 hours ago at 11 o'clock Phoenix time, or Arizona time. And so hopefully some of you people coming back from the Scottsdale Amateur Radio Club Field Day are able to hear this on your car radios. I want to just take a few minutes to talk about it. Number one, the food was absolutely superb. Barney, KB7KOE, and Mark, KB7LPR, were in charge of what they called the renowned cooking of the two. They presented their pigsty awards to many for surviving their gourmet cooking. That was a very important feature of Field Day. But now to the more important things. My children love their French toast. But we'll discuss more of Field Day in the coming weeks ahead. Suffice it this time to say all was going well when I left them yesterday. 8 or 9 antennas were up and working, and close to 100 people had already attended, with many more expected last night and today. Contacts were being made by the satellite station, the solar-powered station, the novice station, and the satellite station was making a contact about once every 5 minutes. And Lee Finkel, KY7M, and when I was sitting next to him as he was talking on 20-meter phone, a 20-meter CW, he was up to about 120 contacts per hour at one time. And when I left, he was averaging around 70 per hour. Not too bad. So I hope you're all listening. And we'll talk again more about Field Day. I enjoyed myself, and I certainly hope everybody out there participated some way or another in Field Day. Well, Bob and Ray were talking about Army Mars, and, well, what are the three divisions of Mars? I know there are three different branches of Mars, so let's get into that, and let's just start with the history of Mars and the different branches.
Okay, thank you much, Lynn. Let's start off with the history. It's somewhat interesting. It's actually Mars, as we know it today, has been around since 1925. A gentleman by the name of Captain Tom Rivers, who was in the Army Signal Corps, recognized the need for trained radio operators within the Army. And by utilizing amateur radio operators, the Mars today started as an organization called Army Amateur Radio System, or ARRS. And it survived until 1941, and actually through the war, it was deactivated. However, the amateur radio operators and a lot of the folks that were involved in ARRS became military radio operators during the war. Consequently, at the end of the war, they saw that the advantage of ARRS for having trained operators, so they reinstituted it, and we continued on. In 1948, it was renamed, when the Air Force joined the program, to the Military Amateur Radio System, or the acronym of MARS. And based on the strong volunteer amateur radio operators who were affiliated with the military, it was later renamed to the Military Affiliated Radio System, MARS as we know it today, and in that particular case, the word amateur was replaced with affiliated. In 1963, the Navy and Marine Corps joined the MARS program, so today we basically have all three MILDEPs having MARS programs, that is the Army, the Air Force, and the Navy and Marine Corps.
Okay, now I got my headphones working, and I can hear again, and I feel like a human being. We have a trivia question that we'd like to present at this time, and the winner of this will receive a T-shirt. And our phone number again is 241-1510, 241-1510, or 1-800-293-KFNN, 1-800-293-5366. I know that a lot of you listening are probably in your cars, and do not have access to a phone, so this question is somewhat easy, And Ray or Bob, which one of you wants to answer this?
Well, I'll go ahead and answer the question, but let me first say that during the course of our discussion this afternoon, we will be talking about the context of our trivia question, which is, what modes of operation is authorized within Mars? And during the discussion here this afternoon, we will undoubtedly be providing all of the information to give you the answer to what that particular trivia question is. And the question again, what modes of operation is authorized within Mars?
Okay, so in other words, what modes of communication, whether it be sideband, CW, et cetera, which modes can be used and are used for Mars?
Yes, that's the general gist of the conversation, because as we get further into the discussion about what Mars is, and specifically Army Mars, and Mars as it pertains to the sovereign state of Arizona, we will be talking about these modes.
Okay, and again, our number is 241-1510, 241-1510. I'd like to take a moment to talk about Showtronics. Showtronics is the place to buy a computer, a printer, a monitor, or any other component. Showtronics, where you can get a 386 computer for as little as $1,189, and that includes 1 megabyte of RAM, 1.2 and 1.44 drives, 40 megabyte hard drive, a VGA monitor and card, 2 serial ports, 1 parallel port, and a game port. That's right, $1,189. Showtronics has over 15 demo systems on display for you to test drive. Not like other stores that I've been in that have two or three or one. They have 15 of them that are operating. It's amazing. With over 45 knowledgeable employees on staff, you're assured of getting the right answers to all your computer questions. They're open 7 days a week for your convenience. Showtronics is located at 1831 West Rose Garden Lane. That's north of Bell Road, about a mile and a half, and it's off of 19th Avenue. I don't know if you've ever been to Showtronics, but if you haven't, you definitely should go and see what a computer store really could and should be. Their phone number is 256-2266, 256-2266. And remember, just for stopping into Showtronics and mentioning Ham Radio and More, you'll receive a free box of diskettes. You can't lose. I mean, a free box of diskettes, the lowest prices, fantastic service, training. Just stop in. You can't lose. Also, Alan Shope, the owner of Showtronics, says if he has an item in stock, any item in stock, he guarantees that he'll beat anybody else's price on the same product. That's right, a low price guarantee. The best service, the lowest prices, free training classes every Saturday and Tuesday. And Tuesday, free diskettes. Why shop anywhere else? Showtronics, 256-2266. The more you know about computers, the better Showtronics looks. So stop in today. We don't have any correct answers yet. So, by the way, if anybody has an answer, 241-1510 for the trivia question. How many people are active in Mars today?
Well, Len, I can speak for the Army. Right now, we have approximately 4,600, that's 4,600 stations in Army Mars, of which 4,300 are affiliate members, i.e. amateur radio operators. The remaining 300 or so are military stations throughout the world.
And in the state of Arizona, Ray?
Within the state of Arizona right now, we have 93 active military affiliate stations that I'm carrying currently on the database on my roster. And, of course, all of these stations, all 90-odd affiliates within the state, do not operate simultaneously on the same frequencies, because it would be utter chaos if we did not have control on our nets and our operations. But typically we will have during some of our daytime as well as nighttime nets, during any given calendar month, we will in all probability see in one mode or another, whether it be on teletype, CW, packet, single sideband, or whatever, we will be having all of these stations. Of course, all of them are not quote-unquote radio operators of the truest sense, because some of these are part of my state staff, and they have additional responsibilities of other things as well, rather than, but it does not discount the possibility that they have to get up and have a minimum hours of HF radio operations and other times on VHF as well. So we do have a job for almost anybody if they're interested into it, other than just sit there. At one of the most boring things, I believe, is to sit there and monitor a radio for 4 and 5 hours. Of course, our nets typically only run of 1 hour duration at any given time. But we do have 93 stations active on the current roster.
Okay, so there's a lot of people involved, but you need more.
Well, you can always use more people, even though we have coverage over the majority of the built-up populated areas. We still need to have radio operators that are capable of emergency-type operations to support anything of what comes on. And one of the themes that I've been beating on here lately is get yourself into a position to where you can expect the unexpected. And by doing this, we are preparing ourselves as part of our stated mission to support the local civil and emergency communications and operations by being there ready to communicate as required.
I might add, Len, that during the Desert Shield, Desert Storm conflict, that Army Mars gained 20% in its membership. That's over 900 members in about a seven-month period. A really fantastic goal.
Well, it created a lot of interest. So.
It certainly did. A lot of the human interest side of it, as well as the ham operators wanting to really be directly involved in the program, and we certainly appreciated their efforts, and we certainly were very extremely pleased to see that many members come on board.
Well, we'll get back to a little bit about that in a little while. How does a person get involved with Army Mars, since that's basically what you're here to talk about? And let's just take a person walking down the street. Can he or she join Army Mars? What are their requirements? What does an amateur radio operator need to be? What could they expect if they want to join Army Mars?
Okay, Len, let's first cover the eligibility for Mars. Basically, the things that all three services have presently is the applicant must be at least 14 years of age or older, be a United States citizen or a resident alien, possess a valid amateur radio license issued by FCC or other competent U.S. authority, and possess a station capable of operating on Mars HF frequencies. Now, the differences between the three services beyond that is the fact that the Army has a requirement that 12 hours per calendar quarter, in other words, within a three-month period, they must participate at least 12 hours on our nets. And the Air Force has 12 hours participating with 6 hours in their primary HF assignment. And Navy Marine Corps has a minimum of 18 hours per quarter, 12 of which must be in their HF networks.
Okay.
And as far as the person joining, there's many ways of getting it. Number one, on our pamphlet, we have folks calling my office directly or the state director. In either case, we'll ensure that the interested party will get information about Mars and the necessary paperwork to get processes done.
One of the things that a lot of people, as my experience in the state director here recently, particularly since the Persian Gulf crisis, was that, as Bob alluded to, we had a tremendous amount of interest in there, and a lot of people were wanting to join the Mars program into it. But a lot of folks don't realize that for the Army Mars program, there is a state director within each state. But I have had to handle correspondence, which, you know, paperwork takes an abundance of time to work on. But I've had correspondence addressed to me, down to the chief, to me, through the Western Area Director, from the Western Area back down to me, because the people didn't really know that there was a state director within the state of Arizona. So the paper channel for application must start with the individual, of course, and he, of course, fills that out and includes a Xerox copy. Then it goes for review to the state director, who in turn approves it or disapproves it, whatever the case may be, and sends it on to the Western Area Director. So there is the fundamental paper trail. And, you know, nothing moves without paper.
And what type of training is involved? Now, once the person is accepted or whatever, what type of training is involved? How long does it take till he's a full-pledged member?
Well, like Glenn, it kind of depends on the individual. First of all, of course, since Mars is a military-type function, we try to train the amateur radio operators into the military communications type of network.
So they got to go to boot camp?
No, not really. Oh. We make it relatively easy. The best thing that we do is we have actual training that's on the air. The state director will get, provide them with the frequency and the time, and get on the training net to start learning the way that we do business in the Mars world. We also have the appropriate manuals, et cetera, that spell out the program and the proper protocol, if you may, that we use in our system.
Within the state of Arizona, I have a staff that assists me with the operations, and I have a dedicated individual as a training coordinator who also has an assistant, and this is based upon a geographical location between the two of them, that if one of the two individuals to provide the training can make it on the HF nets, then the other individual usually makes it on the VHF nets. But these individuals come on and provide the necessary training. And one of the big things, of course, is amateur radio operators. You know, we pick up a lot of bad habits. And being the key word of the acronym MARS, the first word there is military. And, of course, we've got to look at the compatibility between being able to interface with a military radio circuit and a Mars radio circuit. So we've got to speak the same language. And this is one of the things we've had to overcome, is the language barrier. For an example, we have pro words, we have Q signals, we have Z signals. And in the amateur radio world, you know, we're always prone to say, man, I can't even hardly copy it because of all of the QRM. Well, in the Mars or military, we generally say that you are unreadable. So, you know, we use more plain English in the military than we do, because one of the bad habits is carry over from the amateur world into the military, because the military is hut 2, 3, 4, and away we go, because there's a precise place and time for particularly in voice communications.
Okay. We have not had a winner yet. If somebody wants to call in and try again to guess, we need a correct answer still. On the type of mode, now it's kind of a tricky question, which might be causing some of the problems with people not having the right answer. But all we want to know is what modes, what type of modes of communication are utilized on the Army Mars nets, correct?
That's it. We've already said several of the modes that we use. And, of course, that brings me up to something else that about Mars in itself. There is looked at the benefits of having Mars membership is multifaceted there. That it gives a opportunity for everybody to increase communication skills and capabilities. And we also have correspondence courses that are available for the more technically oriented people, that they can subscribe to one of the world's best military schools by a correspondence course. And then, of course, we operate on specific military frequencies. And
I was going to ask you, you operate Mars totally different than on any of the amateur radio frequencies.
We do not rely upon any amateur frequencies whatsoever. We are allocated within each given area and each state as best as we possibly can on a non-interference basis. Certain specific frequencies designated for primary and alternate. For example, as we know that as we go from season to season, particularly from winter time, where a low frequency would be good propagation during the daytime, In the summer, we've got to change that frequency to a higher frequency to maintain the same reliable communication. So we do use military frequencies exclusively that are assigned for Mars operation.
I might add to that, Len, that that's one of the advantages that Mars has because of the amateur radio world married up with the military frequencies that we have the capability of interfacing traffic from Mars into the affiliate world and vice versa. So in reality, our operators are given two worlds that they really can operate in effectively.
Okay, we have a winner, and let's go to the phones and welcome... Welcome Larry Racine, KB7KQG, to Ham Radio and More.
Oh, the answer is all modes are authorized by the FCC.
Okay.
Although I don't know how you'd use amateur television, but...
Well, actually, Ray was talking about that before we asked the question. He said slow scan and fast scan television.
Right. Well, here again, we don't worry about the modes authorized by the FCC because this is a military-controlled operation. And in this particular instance, the FCC doesn't really come into any great play.
Yes, I understand that.
In regard to our modes, we encourage a considerable amount of experimentation, and believe it or not, but both slow scan and fast scan TV has also been entertained as a usable function within Army Mars.
Uh-huh.
And Packet, we discussed at breakfast,
sure.
Is utilized quite a bit now, and you're using a new form of software or experimenting with and all different types of things.
All right, we're looking at, we've got some amateur software we've been working with and with permission of the author. To try to improve the movement of traffic in that particular arena. But again, we like to see all modes of operation utilized because each has their place under certain conditions.
Okay, well, you got a great program, and it's getting better every time.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you for calling. You have won a Sundrop T-shirt and cap.
All right.
Sundrop is
an extra large.
you can get any size you want, and I don't even think they have a medium. I know they gave my daughter a T-shirt, and it was a large, so I don't think they have anything smaller. But you can get an extra large. That's no problem. But the Sundrop is Arizona's cheery goodwill ambassador for the state of Arizona. That's what the Sundrop is, and it's just a beautiful character, and it's whatever is good. Is going on in Arizona. That's where the Sundrop is. He's been utilized in parades and different charity events. And if it's good about Arizona, the Sundrop is there. So I appreciate your calling.
Right.
And keep listening, Larry. 73s. Okay. I want to take a minute to talk about a friend of mine. By now, most of you have heard me talk again and again and again about my friend Ken Nichols, WA7HXZ. In fact, he was on the show a couple weeks ago. Ken should be his phone number should be etched in your brain, 228-2336, 228-2336. He's the fleet manager for Linda Brock Automobile. But did you know... Something we've not discussed before is that Ken not only sells new vehicles at the lowest prices anywhere, he gives you not only the best service you'll receive anywhere, you can lease any new vehicle that you want from him. Ken has financing plans available, but Ken also sells beautiful used cars and trucks. That's right. Used cars and trucks at super low prices. We've never discussed it before. In fact, I didn't know he did it. That's right. But you can get, the secret is out now, it's revealed. Ken Nichols does sell used cars and trucks. He has over 119 of them in stock available right now. And we were going over some prices on some of these vehicles. He had some trucks, pickup trucks, etc. And the prices were very, very, very phenomenal. So he can get you, put you into one of those at a very low price. So you can order new or used, buy new or used vehicles, any vehicle, whether it's one that Linda Brock carries, like Volkswagen, BMW, Dodge, or Oldsmobile, or you can buy an Infiniti or a Lexus or a Cadillac or whatever you want from Ken, or Jaguar from Ken Nichols. Get any vehicle that you want at the price you want to afford, that you can afford, any make, any vehicle whatsoever. And now used cars too. No matter which way you go, his price is super. Other hams have saved up to $2,000 buying from Ken. So call Ken now, stop in. You can get a really nice free cap just for stopping in. He'll give you a cap. So, I mean, that's an incentive just to stop by on McDowell. You can't, it's on seven. It's like 7,000, I'm sorry, I don't have it right in front of me, his exact address. Actually, it's 6601 East McDowell, 6601. Stop by, get a free cap. And if you go into the parts department, the service department, and you mention Ham Radio and More, they'll give you 15% off. Just for mentioning the show, you can get 15% off on parts and labor at Linda Brock. So don't delay. You can't lose by calling Ken. New cars, used cars, leases, etc. Give Ken a call, 228-2336, 228-2336. Don't delay. Back to Army Mars. Let's talk about what was really interesting to me is, and very topical because it just occurred, is Desert Storm. Tell us some of the stories that went on. What did we do for all the soldiers that were in Desert Storm, and how did you personally even get involved with Army Mars in Desert Storm?
Well, then that's a real exciting story for me. I did have a chance to go over there myself in December to see how things were headed, and I'll kind of cover that real quick in some of the accomplishment of Mars. First of all, the first thing we had to do was gain host country approval to operate Mars in that country, since we never had any stations over there. We finally got approval around the 15th of September of 91, and I'm really excited. Within 72 hours, that's three short days, we actually had three Mars stations functioning in Saudi as soon as we gained approval. Now, this came about because Captain Godlewski, who's also an amateur radio operator, had brought his own equipment with him, recognizing that Mars would probably be activated over there. So with his station and a few more, we actually started moving traffic within 72 hours after we gained approval.
Now, I know this is very rudimentary, but tell everybody out there, what does moving traffic mean?
Okay, sorry about that.
Because they might think that a car is going to hit you as you're crossing the street.
Sure, I understand. Okay, one of the functions that we perform in Mars, one of the two, the telegraph-type system, as we call on MarsGram, which is basically a telegram-type document with 30 words or less that we transmit for the military member and or his loved ones free of charge. So when we talk about moving traffic, we're literally talking about moving that message traffic or that MarsGram from one point to another. As I stated earlier, within 72 hours, we're up and running. Within 60 days, we had a formal gateway station. A gateway station in a Mars program is basically a hub where it ties together quite a few individual stations into a central location for moving traffic from one geographical area to another. In this case, our gateway station was located in Dahran, and it tied into a gateway station in Germany and also to a couple of gateway stations here in the United States. So that was our tie between those two.
And you went to Dahran yourself?
Yes, I had the golden opportunity in early December to go over there and help get it established, because you have to recognize that only military personnel were basically allowed over there. So we had brought into the Mars program basically overnight a lot of military stations who had never run Mars before, if you may. And the poor captain who was given the glorious duty of being my area director had little or no Mars background. And, of course, he had to try to put together a frequency plan, a network plan, train the operators in the field. So he had his hands full. I thought I'd go over there and give him a hand and kind of find out what support we could give him. And one of the things we did do over there is recognize that the majority of the equipment they were using were the normal tactical radios. They did not have amateur radio equipment.
No Yaesu 1000s?
None that a couple of folks might have brought over, but one of the things I did identify the need for, and my command, United States Information Systems Command, did buy 16 transportable sets, we call them, complete with an antenna and backup generators. to give to deployed to the forward troops, which really needed the communications. In other words, there was no Ma Bell they could go to or no telegraph office.
This is why it is so important that we look at the training aspects of this, that you can understand from what Bob went through that here he is sitting over with a bunch of people in a green suit who are all strictly military communicators, that we must be able to interface with those people in the same language that they talk as well. So this is where we've got to get back to we speak plain English and learn the military aspects of it to get back in there so that we do not have a language barrier, whether it be on teletype because there are certain specific formats that must be followed, whether it be on voice networks, whether it be on packet networks. There are certain military things here because we're talking military here, and if we're going to interface with these military units as a civilian, then we must be able to communicate to them with their own language.
Yeah, it was rather interesting. Like I said, I really enjoyed going over there. On the personal side, before I get into some statistics, on my way over there, I was plopped in an airplane. Actually, I was plopped in a hangar on the East Coast with nothing but green suits. I was the only gentleman around. It was a real honest-to-God civilian.
You're absolutely not a military person. You are a civilian working for the government. I forgot to mention that.
Right. I am a civil servant. I do work for the United States Army, but I wear what we call a muffy food suit.
Okay.
Either case, I had about 5 or 6 hours waiting to get on this airplane, so I went around talking to GIs and finding out if they knew about the program, telling them that we were in existence over there and to utilize it, etc. And I was somewhat dismayed that not too many folks really knew about it. However, on my way back, again, I was in locations where a lot of the military were trying to catch airplanes like myself, and I was just totally pleased to see that the folks coming back at that time, and unfortunately a lot of them were emergency leave time because around Christmas, had not only heard about the system, but had used it and had some very, very positive remarks. The similar stuff that we received from our affiliate membership who had the ability to make the phone patches and run the traffic. It was really great on a personal side to know that it was working. We were getting things through, like some of the soldiers mentioned, it would take weeks and weeks and weeks to get their letters. And having the ability to get a Morris Graham through in some cases in a couple of days was just a morale builder that couldn't have been any better.
I want to get back to some statistics in one moment. We're getting 20 minutes to the hour, and anybody have any calls, any questions for Bob or Ray, give us a call at 241-1510. They'll be happy to answer any questions, or 1-800-293-5366, 241-1510, or 1-800-293-5366. Antennas West, Jim Stevens, KK7C, Provo, Utah, is just finishing packing up his gear from field day right now, I have a hunch. He told us last week where he was going and everything, 10,000 feet above the ground, and hoping to make tons and tons of contacts. Last week, as a guest, he explained how he used solar power supplies for field day and special antennas. That's right, Antennas West sells solar power panels and supplies at super prices. Actually, if you want to buy one now, you can use it next year. You get extra points in field day. For a solar power station. Antennas West has many, many products to offer, from QRV DX half-square antennas for use on all frequencies to QSL cards to rubber duckies to the famous ever-popular Tiger's Tail. When it comes to getting the most out of your station equipment, Antennas West has a product for you. Call Antennas West and mention Ham Radio and More. You can get a fabulous Tiger's Tail, which will greatly improve your 2-meter HD, for only $5. Remember, we tested it, and it absolutely increases your gain between 2 and 3.5 dB. Simple $5 Tiger's Tail really works. There's no question about it. It also worked not as well, but it worked on 440, so you can use it for both, but it's really meant for 2 meters. In addition to the $5 special on a Tiger's Tail, if you order 100 QSL cards, you can get 100 free. So now's the time to order those, too. Call Jim Stevens at Antennas West tomorrow morning, 1-800-926-7373, 1-800-926-7373. Don't forget, also Antennas West will be at Fort Tuthill, and Jim Stevens will present a free seminar on antennas, so you don't want to miss that one. Now let's talk about some statistics, Bob, that occurred at with Desert Storm and Mars.
Okay, Lynn. I think one of the first things we want to talk about is, you know, I keep getting asked, how many stations did we actually have in Saudi? Well, as I mentioned earlier, we started from ground zero, and before the total hostility was over with, we had up to 144 licensed stations. These were all military stations. Now,
wow.
They weren't all on the air at the same time. Like I think everybody can understand as we moved around the desert, there are sometimes you don't particularly want to transmit.
I could see that.
But that was how well it took off. And talking to the soldiers and talking to some of the stations, the drive behind that was the amateur world back here in the States. Some of the comments I heard, if we've got folks back there who are willing to support us, then we're certainly willing to learn how to do the job on the other end. How good a job they did, I am just totally very proud of the system. Army Mars alone during that September of 1990 up through the latter part of May of this year, we processed over 175,000 Marsgrams to and from that arena.
175,000?
That's correct. 175,000 Marsgrams going both directions between the continental U.S., the Saudi, and Germany, since we had some troops out of Germany. In addition to that, we ran an excess of 45,000 phone patches back to the troops there.
What that means for those of you out there who are not familiar, that the person in Saudi or wherever is able to actually talk to their spouse or loved one back here, right?
That's correct. What we did is we utilized the HF radio to make connectivity from the sands, as we call it, or the sandbox, as we affectionately call it, back to one of our radio, our phone pad stations here in the States. And then additionally for that, we would tie the radio into a normal phone line and call the person up. Some of the folks that helped us out, I might add, is U.S. Brent and MCI. They paid for the phone. For example, let me run a scenario. Let's say we've got Joe Snuffy over there in the sandbox, and he connects in through our operators via radio to somebody in New York State, one of our operators there. But the person he's calling is down in Miami, Florida. Well, U.S. Brent and or MCI picked up that phone bill from New York down there to Miami. And, that's quite a few number of phone calls through. I think on a phone patch side of it, the most interesting story I heard was in the process of making a phone call to his wife. His wife went into labor. And a soldier, and I recognize you got a soldier out here in the desert. Nothing around. There's no phones he can pick up. Mm-hmm. The letters take weeks. He's on the phone patch to his wife. She goes into labor. You can imagine what's going through his mind. They rush her off to the hospital. The phone patch operator in the States tracks her down, finds what hospital she's in, finds out her condition. And when the baby's born, he gets a call back to the soldier in the field to let him know that mommy and child is doing fine. He's a happy father of a pound boy. And, of course, this really, really was a great morale builder for the gentleman. The end result here is the phone patch operator, the child was named after the phone patch operator.
Oh, really?
So, you know, he was pretty excited about that.
That's neat. And it's all done as a voluntary basis. I mean, imagine, these people wouldn't have been able to talk to anybody in the United States if it wasn't for the amateur radio group.
That's correct, Jan. The whole thing behind his program, Lynn, is, like I say, 95% of the program is made up of ham operators who are volunteers into the system. And I've got some statistical figures for what we call fiscal year. You know, the military works a little bit different. We go from September 30th to October 1st the following year. So when I talk about fiscal year 90, I'm actually talking about September 89 through October 90.
Okay.
And some figures we've compiled that, through the records that have been provided as office, over 1.7 million man-hours have been provided free by affiliate members for just Army Mars, and I haven't even touched the Navy and the Air Force side yet. During that year, we processed 860,000-plus Mars grams. Well, you can see that we had 175 just out of the Desert Shield, Desert Storm for this year, so we're going to far exceed that figure. And we ran about 22,000 phone patches during that year. Yeah, I like to kind of convert things to dollars and cents, okay, because as everybody knows, the defense budget is going down. We're losing money. We're losing slots throughout the systems. So when I get to talking to our military senior officials, I like to talk in the dollars and cents arenas. And I'd like to share that with your public today. Again, in the September 89 to 90 time figures, we're looking at that the volunteers have provided roughly about $7+ million worth of efforts.
Wow.
Now, that's based on $4.50 an hour. Let's face it, our operators are worth more than that. But
especially to the guys in the field.
Oh, definitely. There's no dollar sign you can put onto it. I've seen grown men cry when they receive a message. I've seen at the National Victory Celebration back in Washington, D.C., you've probably seen on TV, we were very honored to be selected to have a Mars display down there as part of that. And we met literally hundreds of family members who were able to stop by and you know, say thanks for the efforts of the program. And certainly the majority of that goes to our affiliate membership who have devoted their time and efforts. Along back to dollar figures, we figure that during Desert Storm, Desert Shield, we've saved the family and the military person roughly about $7 million in free services. Probably that's a low estimate, but predicated on the number of calls that were made in Mars Grants process. So besides the human interest side of it, we save some cold hard ducks.
Is it public knowledge, or not a question that we should go into, what frequencies we could listen to hear traffic that's going on? Is that something you don't want people to do, or...
Well, it's not the frequencies, although they're military, not classified. There are numerous frequencies, none of which I have, you know, right on my fingertips.
Okay.
But Ray could probably share you those for the state of Arizona, since.
Well, I just thought there might be some people out there with a receiver, sure. You know, not even an amateur radio operator that listening, that just might want to hear some of the traffic going back and forth.
Well, you're right. Our frequencies are not classified. They're public domain, and they're open to anybody that has a receiver that wants to take the time and effort to sit there and scan it. But I'll be very frank with you. I don't feel justified to invite disaster by publicly announcing specific frequencies of operation. I will say, though, that the majority of our frequencies are on the outside of the amateur bands, far enough to where, in some cases, with the newer type of amateur radio equipment, you're going to have to do some extensive modifications to get them to operate out there. But some of the older equipment, they will tune out there and receive these frequencies. But then again, I don't feel like I want to invite disaster by telling what these frequencies are, so that somebody will come up as an incident that happened to relate a small story of a phone patch in operation during Desert Storm. Was that a phone patch was being conducted at the point in time, and somebody on the East Coast come up and says, this is X-ray 4, King, King, King. How about one of you guys giving me a radio check? This is why I say that I don't want to open myself up to disaster, because we need to... hold these frequencies in confidence, even though they are public domain, but we need to treat these with a little bit of confidentiality, because I don't like to experience that, even though I have had that type of experience myself personally in the past. And I know when the day that I received a phone patch from Florida from my son, who was deployed over there, during the hostilities, I was sure glad to have the opportunity to be a member of Mars and participate in that phone patch network. But if somebody came up and requested a signal report while I was conducting a phone patch with my son, I think that it would be the old proverbial CB shotgun time to go hunt him down and teach him a little bit of manners.
I might add, Len, that in the process of Desert Shield, Desert Storm, that is the biggest traffic load Mars has ever seen in its 66-year history. So we just had a tremendous amount of support in that. And again, I just can't possibly relay to you all the phone calls and letters that come to my office. from the families and the soldiers, and how important it was to get that message through or listen to that voice, etc.
Well, lots of people, you know, ask, what is ham radio? And we say it's a hobby, but this shows it's a lot more than just a hobby. I mean, we've affected the lives of, what, there was 550,000 men there and women.
Yeah, I don't know the exact figure, but you're absolutely correct. And we're looking here at basically the morale and welfare side of our program, which is our secondary mission. It's the one that keeps us trained. I'd like to inject back, and we're really coming to being the earthquake in California, the hurricane, I think it was, out on the East Coast. In all these cases, this is where we got in and did our real function in life, and that's provide emergency communications.
Okay, I want to take one moment to talk about Wallpaper World, where selecting wallpaper and custom window treatments is an enjoyable experience. I've been told that buying products at Wallpaper World is like having an uncle in the business. The prices are so low. Amazing. It must be true. They have been in the Valley since 1977. Wallpaper World has 6 great locations, discount showrooms in the Phoenix area, and each store has trained decorators to assist you free of charge in your selection. I mean, you can bring in a pillow or a piece of fabric or a paint swatch, and they'll match wallpaper and blinds for you. They carry hundreds of wallpaper patterns in stock at low, low discount prices, as well as over 1,000 sample books per store, and they're all discounted every day with absolute low price guarantees. In fact, they will beat any price deal you can get on wallpaper orders anywhere in the United States. That means if you come up into Wallpaper World, one of their locations, and say you can find wallpaper at a lower price from XYZ in California or New Jersey or Ohio or Florida or whatever it is, they'll verify it and they'll beat the deal. Absolutely, they will beat the deal. They have their own blind factory for the lowest prices and the best quality on mini blinds, vertical blinds, and pleated shades. Their Chic brand has free measuring and free installation available with minimum purchases. They also manufacture their own wood shutters. So don't delay. Wallpaper World, 678-1234. 678-1234. Or go to the location nearest you. Wallpaper World in Scottsdale, Northeast Phoenix, Northwest Phoenix, Central Phoenix, Mesa, and Chandler. Wallpaper World, you won't be disappointed. I want to take one moment and go through our few cards I have here and let Ray pick out a card that, with his eyes closed, of course, for a winner this week. And as he has his eyes closed and he picks out a card here, okay, the winner is George and Carla Chait, C-H-A-E-T. W1RGH and N7OPU. It's kind of a cute card, actually. It has looks like a rodeo. Western Saturday Night, kind of cute. You have won, guys, George and Carla, in Sun City, West Arizona. You've won a tiger's tail. I hope you're on 2 meters every so often. I will have Jim Stevens from Antennas West, who's donating the tiger's tail, mail one out to you. And that's Antennas West at 1-800-926-7373, and you guys win a tiger tail. Put it on your HT, and you'll be happy you did. It works. We have about 5 more minutes into the show, left in the show, and let's go more into how can a person, who should they contact, where should they contact, I mean, what should they do, because I know you need more volunteers.
Okay.
So give your pitch. Here it is.
Okay. You're absolutely right. We always can use more members to support our particular area, our government, and our country. However, since we're in the great state of Arizona and we happen to have the state Mars director here, rather than me trying to give you my address back at the office, let me give you Ray's address here, or let him give it to you for those folks living in Arizona. He's the guy that's going to have to go through initially before it comes all the way up the chain. Right.
Yeah, this is one of those, thank you, Bob. This is one of those things, like I said earlier, that paperwork is an absolute necessity. Anybody that might be interested in pursuing additional avenues and additional information about the Army Mars Network, feel free to give me a call at Apache Junction, 986-2542. That's Apache Junction, 986-2542. Call on the telephone. Or if you want to just drop me a line, send it to Director, Arizona State Army Mars, at 437 North, 110th Street, Apache Junction, with a zip code 85220. So once again, if you want to make a phone call, feel free to do so, 986-2542, or drop me a note to Director, Arizona State Army Mars, at 437 North, 110th Street, Apache Junction, a zip code of 85220. I'm always willing to sit down and take the time to talk about the Army Mars program. It's something that I've been an advocate of for quite a few years.
And Mars began, what, in 1925? Is that when it first started, was it?
That's right, Len. It's been around since 1925. It's had its changes over the years, and since I've been on the block now, a little over a year, and spending some time with my members and some of the new folks, we're changing the way we do business to stay in step with progress.
Is Army Mars bigger than the other two Mars programs, or...?
We are slightly bigger. The Navy has a very good program. The Air Force also has a big program. I think probably the reason we are is the fact that our mission in the Army has a lot to do with it.
Okay. I want to thank Robert Sutton and Ray Chambers for being my guest today. Really appreciate the time that you've taken. Bob drove in from Fort Huachuca, which is, what, about a three-hour drive?
Roughly about 3 hours down from Sierra Vista.
Yeah, you were going the speed limit. Next week we'll have Dave Blaschke from Texas. Don't miss it. I want to thank my sponsors again, Wallpaper World, Showtronics, and Antennas West. I want to wish my dad a happy birthday again. I know we're going to go out to dinner and celebrate his 80th birthday this evening, and I'm looking forward to that. I'm sure he's looking forward to his 80th birthday, certainly better than that. Ever getting to his 80th birthday. And keep those cards coming, those QSL cards, to Len Winkler in care of KFNN, 4800 North Central, Phoenix, 85012. So until next week, thanks again for listening. Thanks, Bob and Ray, for having the Bob and Ray Show. And 73's Arizona, join Mars. And this is Len Winkler, KB7LPW. We're clear till next week.